Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Gun buy program?
Yes.
So when I was there, there were definitely reports of guns that were homemade guns, cheap guns, poor quality guns, things like that. Would you care to comment on the kinds of things that were bought and whether you think they were worth the money that was spent?
Again, from that standpoint, we'll look to see. I do know that there's an individual who tried to sell homemade guns and air pistols that was not allowed to, and those certainly weren't the things that we were looking for, and I think he was a little upset by it, but you know, again, that was not what we were looking for.
So, okay, just a point of terminology, the homemade gun that the guy was trying to sell, my understanding was that that was a zip gun, that it was actually a firearm. You know, you put a cartridge in and you pull a trigger and something shoots and it explodes and comes out. That's a firearm. It was not an air pellet gun or an air gun or an airsoft gun or a BB gun or anything like that. And I think, you know, the mayor, he wasn't there. He's still on vacation. So I'm going to, you know, overlook the details here. But he was saying that there were no homemade guns that were purchased at the thing. And, you know, I think that's actually turns out to be true. But I kept asking him sort of, you know, what about the value of these guns? You know, were they good or not? And he says,
out of the 63 guns, I have no idea what the condition was of all 63 of them. Were some of them not the best quality? I have no idea. We'll wait and see what happens. But clearly, we did get some guns that were there, and who knows if they had the potential to be used in the wrong way in District 7. That's something we certainly didn't want.
And look, there were 71, it turns out, all acquired in the end for the $10,000. There were no homemade guns, no pellet guns, anything like that, that were actually bought. But there is a bit of a, like, how to categorize this one. The guy who, again, you know, built a homemade gun, the Boomstick 1776 that you've seen on social media, maybe, that he was apparently in line to sell the gun. Like, it was approved as a buyable firearm. But they ran out of money while he was waiting to sell it. And so now he's put money into creating a gun that nobody wants, and also the city won't buy because they ran out of money. So it would have been eligible, but it was not in the guns actually acquired. That's where I think some of the discrepancy has come in over, you know, what happened and what didn't happen. I will tell you this, looking at the pictures of all the guns that we've got put up on our Facebook page, these if the goal was to buy the guns that gang members or violent offenders or people who would threaten to do criminal activity would use, we didn't get many, if any, of those. What we got were, you know, grandpa's pistol that's been wrapped in a rag in a box underneath the sawdust pile in his garage for 30 years. Or the shotgun that maybe you take your life in your own hands shooting it. Yeah, so a lot of guns that I looked at, I'm like, ooh, you know, I wouldn't, or guns that were just, honestly, you could buy new for $100 because they're just really, really, really low quality guns. I don't know if there were that. There were probably a couple in there that looked like they were in better condition than that. So the general consensus with the people I've talked to is that of the $10,000, we probably bought about $2,000 to $3,000 worth of guns. Now, did that wind up saving somebody's life because a gun that got found and got used? Who knows? Maybe. Maybe. And $10,000 is not much to pay to save a life, right? Can we agree about that? So if it did, then wonderful. But if the point was to try to, you know, control crime by reducing guns off the streets, so to say, and I don't think it very likely accomplished that. But you will never know. Okay, we'll never know. 437-1620, 437-1620. What else? You know, the other thing that we got going on is the police chief search. We got an update on that yesterday from the mayor.
48 applicants already, and it closes on March 31st is when it will close. So
yeah, so end of this month, we'll see how many we wind up getting. Again, this has been an ongoing search. I will say just kind of one note on this that, look, Kevin Christman is the interim. We did a nationwide search to find him last year. And then, you know, you and I, you know that I and the mayor have disagreed about this. I think he should have just been made the chief. I don't think we should have gone through this national search process that's expensive. And what's the point? We have the guy we already identified. The mayor says we have the guy we identified as the assistant chief. We had been hoping he'd get a year or two of seasoning before he'd move into the chief spot, but Tommy Leiter retired too quickly. I mean, I think Kevin's ready to begin with. I don't think there's a question. But here's the sort of the political question is if Christman winds up not getting this job, you know, I think that's going to be a political problem for the mayor because I think he'll lose the support of law enforcement. I'm not saying they should lose it. I'm saying I know how these guys think, and I think that's what's going to happen. And if he's running for re-election, it's already going to be difficult given some of the things he's done and the way people have reacted to it. So, and especially if he runs against, you know, Morgan, and who knows who else might jump in between now and then. I'm just saying there's a political dimension. Now, I don't think that's going to guide the issue because I think they're going to pick the person that is the best qualified. And now they've committed to the process, so you got to follow through the process. And there's a bunch of people on this board that are going to vet the candidates. I just think practically that's a challenge for the mayor from a political perspective at this point if Christman doesn't get the job, which I hope and actually expect that he will. 716 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. One traffic note. Westbound on Main Street that's been closed because of the ECUA work is from DeVillers to B is going to be closed for about 3 weeks. Second week of April is when that is going to open up. What do you see, Davis?
So, yeah, taking a look at the front gate of NES Pensacola, it is backed up all the way to Highway 98. Also, Gulf Beach Highway going eastbound is delayed heading towards Navy Boulevard. This is all because earlier there was a report about an accident that took place at the back gate. However, the back gate is now open, but we're just seeing these delays that are just built up due to the prior closure of the back gate. So just be ready to use patience over there. Now, if you're traveling northbound across Garcon Point Bridge, it is pretty slow moving going across the entire northern span, while southbound, you're going to be met with some delays as you are approaching Gulf Breeze. Nothing too significant over there. Avalon Boulevard, though, we are seeing delays as you're going northbound. Once you get around Mary Kitchens Road, you're going to be met with these delays there. Southbound going towards I-10, also showing some minor delays backed up around San Blas Street. I-10, I-110, however, checking in clear. Good news there. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the Fives.
So you always hear me talking about Christine Leavenworth and her wonderful team at Leavenworth Realty. All the homes they sell fast, homes they sell above list price, and, you know, all of that is true. Well, she's actually kind of made this, you know, we used to talk about 30 days, she'd guarantee 30 days. She's changed the guarantee. It's now 2 weeks. And here's the way it works. Not every home qualifies, okay, and you guys have to agree about a price, okay? So there are some preconditions, so you got to find out more before, you know, you just take it to the bank. But if you agree about a price and the home doesn't sell, you know, and your home qualifies in 14 days, she'll pay you $5,000. So she'll pay you to not sell your, you know, so, but the point is that she sells the houses, right? I mean, she can make that offer because she's not going to have to pay. She gets them sold typically within a week, typically multiple offers, typically above you, above the list price, because they just know what they're doing. And the market is wicked hot right now. So if you want to sell a home and you want to get good money for it, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they can take care of you. 723-9158, 723-9158. Good morning, 721 here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. My phone number is 437-1620. I got vaccinated yesterday, first of the Moderna two-shot regimen, so I'll tell you about that in a second. Before that, Cooper Davis in the newsroom with our headlines.
Cool. Andrew, Florida Senator Rick Scott wants an urgent investigation into what he calls an alarming statistic involving the overuse of social media. Scott yesterday sent a letter to the CEOs of Facebook and Twitter to express his concerns over the impact of social media on children. Scott says the CDC has noticed the suicide rate among teens is rising significantly as more kids use social media on a regular basis. Andrew?
Okay. All right, Coop, thanks so much for the update. I know I told Cooper to go quick because I had an interview I wanted to run here, so sorry for making you rush, Coop. But yesterday I had a chance to talk to Vanessa Phillips at the Brownsville Community Center, where I was about 100th in line or something like that to get the shot yesterday. So I'm here at the Brownsville Community Center with Dr. Vanessa Phillips with the Florida Department of Health in Escambia County. She oversees a ton of things, including communications in part for the Department of Health. Tell us what's going on here today, Dr. Phillips.
So today we are vaccinating people 50 and older in Escambia County. We also are able to take Florida residents, even snowbirds. We can do snowbirds. So as long as they bring down a valid ID today, we can go ahead and take care of them. As long as they match that governor's executive order, we will be happy. And we're giving out Moderna vaccine today, which is a two-dose series. And so today we are taking walk-ins, which is kind of rare for us. So we're excited. And we're here until 2 o'clock.
And so how many shots did you guys have available for first shots today? I heard 350. Does that sound right to you?
We have about 300 available today, okay. And we had a line at the first open of the day. So I'm not sure what we're down to, but we have plenty more available. And whatever we don't have today, we can get them scheduled in our clinic this week.
Oh, so you can make scheduling for overflow today?
We can make that happen.
Outstanding. Outstanding. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, the National Guard is here just kind of overseeing and shepherding. That's pretty typical for these kind of things.
The National Guard actually is a great partner. The National Guard helps us out with whatever we need help with when we're doing our community pods. So today, National Guard is helping us with traffic control. They're helping us greet all of these wonderful residents that we have coming in today. And they're keeping us safe, too.
Right, Yeah. And so for the process, people, they don't need proof of insurance. They just need an ID. They come in, they sign a consent form, they answer a few questions, they get a shot, and they wait 15 minutes, right?
That is correct. You do not need any insurance. It is free of charge. You just need to bring a valid Florida ID or bring in that information that tells me that you're a snowbird, a bill that's in your name that tells me you live here half of the year, and or your medical exemption form that's signed by a physician. That's all you need. Come on in, get a vaccine, wait 15 or 30 minutes, depending on your health needs, and we'll take care of you.
And I know the governor has touted that especially the Brownsville was the first place where we did outreach in a church facility, and it's been specifically targeted to get walk-ups, which is more likely to draw communities of color, people who are less likely to have means to transport or register online. It seems like that's been a success. As I look around the room, it looks very diverse. From your point of view, same thing? It's been good at getting people who might not otherwise get vaccinated?
One great thing about using the Brownsville Community Center is, again, it's a community center. And so we're right in the heart of the community. Anybody can really reach this center. It can be walk up. It can be reached by the bus because we're right on the bus line. Or it can be 15 minutes from pretty much anywhere. So we want to make sure that our residents, our Escambia County residents, can access vaccine quickly.
Anything else that I didn't ask that you want to let people know as they're hearing this on the radio today?
We are just doing our part over at the Florida Department of Health in Escambia County, and we want to make sure that everyone who wants a vaccine can get a vaccine.
Very good. Dr. Vanessa Phillips, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for vaccinating us and helping the community be healthier.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for all that you do.
And I got to be honest, this was about as easy as it could be. I was just going to see. I was curious because I was at the press conference downtown, and I was just going to go see, what does the line look like? And it was 100 people or so, and I thought, I'll get in line. I'll wait and see. If it's slow, I'll get out and I'll just, because I was just going to book it some other time. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, that's kind of cool to get it the first day I'm eligible as a 50-year-old, just turned 50 in February. So I wait there. It's about 15, 20 minutes to get in the door. About another, 3 minutes to get sitting in a chair. And then I had to wait because they had to thaw out the vaccine. They don't want to thaw it too much and then it spoils. So you have to thaw it from the freezer and then you have to thaw it a little bit after that. So they got to prepare it. Waited for maybe 10 minutes to get the shot. Shots in the arm. Wait 15 minutes. You're good to go. My arm's a little sore. The muscle is a little sore. And that's it. That's it. Weird kind of tingle a little bit in the arm yesterday off and on, but otherwise nothing. Now, the second shot, I have no real expectation. It could be, I hear a lot of people have bad, reactions a day or two after the second shot, which I'll get in a month. I don't know what to expect because everybody's different. We'll see. But like I said, easy peasy. And they're doing all different kinds of ones this week. They got Moderna shots coming in some days. You got to schedule those. The J&J, they got different ones coming in this week and also in Milton at the Bells. So there's lots of ways to get the vaccine if you're 50 and up right now. 726 News. And so, you know, again, thank you. And I did say this on Facebook, but I'll say it again. Thank you to President Trump for Operation Warp Speed. Thank you for the scientists and all of the healthcare professionals. Thank you for DeSantis for making it available. Thanks for the Florida Department of Health. And, you know, all of which works together to get us immunized. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives.
Is going back to the front gate of NES Pensacola, where it is very delayed trying to get to the front gate. Backed up all the way to Highway 98 this morning. In fact, it appears to be before you even get to Highway 98, you're going to be met with these delays. So just expect a good amount of time as you're trying to get on over to the front gate. The back gate is open once again. That's why these delays are built up the way they are, is because of the prior closing, but it is now open once again and flowing smoothly, by the way. Southbound going on Garcon Point Bridge appears to be delayed before you even get to the bridge now. You'll be met with these delays right as you're getting through the toll plaza, so just be ready to pack your patience there. It appears that it's going to be about 20 minutes or so to get you on through to Gulf Breeze. Gulf Breeze going northbound out of Gulf Breeze, I should say, to Milton. Moving a little slow, but then once you get through the toll plaza, it should check in clear all the way to I-10, so good news there. Highway 98 in Gulf Breeze. East and westbound traffic are showing typical delays. Eastbound, more delayed, backed up around the Bell's Winn-Dixie parking lot. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
Imagine me. Any thoughts on what you would like to see on the ECUA water tower downtown?
My only advice to Bruce Woody when he asked me is that I would keep something on there that had the Blue Angels and was the Navy. So after that, it's really theirs. They can do what they wish with it. The only thing I advise Bruce is I would not touch the Blue Angels. And I think I saw Andrew's post about that as well. So I know that's near and dear to his heart. And I want to be very clear. I told him that that was something I would not mess with. I would make sure I had something. I don't know that you need to have the golf tournament that's defunct on there anymore, but I think having something for the Blue Angels is very important, and I think it's important for the community and important for so many aspects of what's here. So,
absolutely. So they're going to meet today, 3 o'clock, at their main offices. My strong recommendation, dear ECUA board members, keep the Blue Angels and Home of the Blue Angels on the south. Make it the cradle of naval aviation and the wings of gold on the north. Do whatever you want to do. Welcome to the first America's first settlement on the east. That's fine. Cooper Davis has your local news coming up next, and then we have Sheriff Simmons right after that.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. People ran or hid during a shooting at a supermarket in Boulder, Colorado. A suspect seen being taken away is a middle-aged white man. No word why he may have done it.
10 people in all were killed by the lone suspected shooter who police say was eventually arrested. One of those 10 who died, Officer Eric Talley, who was the first to get on scene. He was 51 years old, a father of 7 kids.
Fox's Jeff Paul. It's the 7th mass killing this year in the United States. The Biden administration has officials in Mexico and Central America for meetings about the surge of migrants coming to our southern border.
Officials say they're trying to get at the causes of migration, like promoting job creation. The administration also says it's running a campaign featuring thousands of radio ads in Brazil and in the Northern Triangle. That's El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, telling would-be migrants to scrap their travel north.
Fox's Rich Edson. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:39 here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now, we have Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Hey, I am doing well. It's always good to talk to you. We have a couple of incidents locally that we ought to talk a little bit about. I know one of them was this, I guess, a shootout that happened at 9 Mile and Klondike at the gas station, some motorcyclists and somebody else.
Yeah, that was crazy. It happened on, Sunday evening. We had a situation where we had about six to seven people on a motorcycle had stopped to fuel their motorcycles. They appear to be from out of town. We believe they're maybe from Mississippi, either passing through from South Florida, Mississippi, or coming back the other way. When a gentleman in a white Honda pulled up, got into a physical altercation with him initially, and there was a fight, and then he left and got back into his car, left the gas station only to return a minute or so later, and ultimately, as was reported, he pulled out a gun and started shooting at some of the motorcycle, the individuals on the motorcycle, two of which, at least two of them that I saw, returned fire with weapons that they had in their possession, and then he left only to come back. So he came back three total times, this individual in a white car, and it does not appear to be anyone suffering life-threatening injuries. We're still trying to determine exactly who they are. We do have some leads, and we're following up on those leads.
So, wow. First of all, wow. I mean, I knew part of the story. I didn't know all of that. Who was hit? Who was wounded in the process?
We don't have the information. No one.
Okay.
No one that were on the motorcycles appeared to be hit because, again, through the surveillance video, no one looks to be hit. Now,
okay.
We're still trying to determine whether who the suspect in the white car was and whether he was hit or not. We're still working on that. We feel pretty confident we'll have him identified shortly, and then we'll put, try to figure out exactly what took place and figure out a motive.
Wow. Okay. So obviously, since we don't know who they are yet, the question of, legal possession of the guns is still an open one. But certainly the, from what we know so far, the person who initiated the shooting in the white Honda, he would be in violation of the law. Clearly, it sounds like the guys on motorcycles, as long as they were legally in possession of guns, would have been within their right to self-defense at that point, based on what you've told me. Is that kind of how you guys read it?
Yeah, based on surveillance footage that we've seen. Now, we don't know what happened before then.
Sure.
But the individuals that are on motorcycles were just standing there at the gas station, fueling their motorcycles up. When this guy comes up, and then again, there is a physical altercation, but then the white car leaves, only to come back apparently with a firearm and start using it. So okay. I would agree with your assessment, although again, it's so early in the investigation, I hate to say that anyone's in the clear at this time, except to say that it was just an eventful afternoon at the Shell station.
Wow, and obviously very good news that no bystanders were hurt in the process. You know, one of the things I think I had, when I hear motorcycle and I hear group of motorcyclists, I think, some people have in the back of their head that's always going to be troublemakers, gangs, white gang, maybe white supremacist type thing. Do we know anything about race of the people involved? Is there anything like that that maybe just can clarify for people?
Yeah, the suspect appears to be a black male, and everyone on the motorcycles are black males. There are some black females that are around there as well, so they're clearly traveling in a group. But again, all they were doing was pulled in and fueling their motorcycles, going inside, looks like getting snacks. So the quick answer to your question is the individuals that were on the motorcycles are African-American, and the suspect in the white car was African-American as well.
Okay. Not that makes anything any better. I mean, it's, just that's the kind of thing I know people tend to kind of think, and I wanted to, find out if that might be relevant. There was also, was there a shooting on the beach? Is that also true?
Last Wednesday, I guess it was, in the evening at the Surf and Sand Hotel, we got a report of an individual, an armed individual in a domestic violence type situation. When we get there, we notice, and again, anytime we're involved, an officer involved shooting, we ask the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to investigate. So I can't get into too many details, but I can let you know what's already been reported. And that is that when we get there, we notice that the suspect did have a firearm in his waistband. So he was indeed armed, which is what the report was. And whenever we gave him directions, he, instead of obeying those directions, he reached for that weapon, forcing our deputy to shoot at him.
Okay. So, and that was while I was on vacation, so that's why I wasn't as familiar with that one. But this is obviously FDLE's investigating, and so you can't probably talk about it too much. But it sounds, from the little information you've given, I understand kind of where we're at this point. But that's all you can really say, I assume, at this point. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, all I can say is you can't pull a weapon on a deputy.
Right.
That simple.
Right. Very good. We're talking to Sheriff Chip Simmons of the Escambia County Sheriff's Office. Sheriff, hang on for me for just 1 second. Let me get a quick traffic break in here with Davis Allen, Traffic on the Fives.
Yeah, Andrew, we do have an accident on I-10 going eastbound. This is right over the overpass for Highway 29. Backing up delays all the way almost to exit 5 at Nine Mile Road. So just be ready to pack your patients over there. Also, southbound Highway 29 and Pine Forest Road, respectively, both in between 9 Mile and I-10, seeing southbound delays over there. And just keep in mind that the front gate of NES Pensacola is delayed, backed up to the Walmart Supercenter and Garcon Point Bridge, showing north and southbound delays. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the 5s.
Thanks so much, Davis. Now back to Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, the story you just mentioned last week out at Pensacola Beach, it reminded me of something that I've been wanting to ask you. And it's a question I don't really know the answer to, but so we know the logistical challenges of your deputies operating out on the beach with the bridge out. I mean, that's a long way around back to home base, so to speak. But this, I assume, is especially problematic when you've got to arrest somebody and take them to jail, because that's now, what would have otherwise been maybe an hour, maybe an hour and a half commitment is now maybe a 4 or 5 hour commitment. How does that play into the choice about making arrests, and how does that logistically work for your deputies stationed at the beach?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been asked that a bit. We're like anyone else, anyone that lives on the beach and works in town or vice versa. We have to make that trek all the way around. We do have some deputies that live in Pensacola Beach and some that even live in the Gulf Breeze area. So and that's why they work in Pensacola Beach anyways, because it's close to their home. So that works out to our advantage. But most of them have to make that drive. It's going to take a little bit longer. I can't say that it would factor into whether we arrest somebody. That's just part of the deal. If you violate the law, if you have to go to jail, we understand it's going to take a little while to get there. But we're doing a service for Escambia County, and if an individual needs to go to jail to answer to the crimes that he's been charged with, then that's going to take place.
I just wonder. It made me think about whether even something like a halfway station at the Santa Rosa Jail or something would make sense. I just thinking about it's literally a 4 to 5 hour commitment by the time you include the process of booking in. And so if you're talking about arresting spring breakers and things like that, that's where my head was at. So what a mess, man. In addition to what we already know is the mess all the time. Hey, you guys were also involved in the torch run, right?
Yeah, yesterday morning we had about 30 of our employees. We had our whole SWAT team out there. All of our cadets were participating, some of our crime scene personnel. I was out there in the morning, but I wasn't able to run because, I was committed to do some other things. But they do this for the Special Olympics, and we've done this every year. We did this when I was the police chief down at the Pensacola Police Department, and it's just a great reason to get out and to raise money. And then when I'm not sure what their plans are because of COVID, but when you have an opportunity, if you have an opportunity to see these Olympians, these special Olympians compete and the looks on their face and just how competitive and really how talented they are, it'll do your heart good. And we're just proud to be a part of it, to do just a small piece and help them raise money so that they can compete in this year and future years' Special Olympics.
Oh, I love it. Hey, one last quick thing, Sheriff. I said last question, but I lied to you. I know you saw the news about this shooting at the King Supers, the grocery store out in Boulder yesterday. Terrible tragedy. A police officer was killed who was responding to the scene. I think we've got it's 9 maybe other people who were also killed, and they apprehended the suspect. I know we're totally out of time, and it's unfair to ask you, but, I see something like that, and I think of all the conversations that we have had about, get your permit, get your gun, be prepared, train, be ready. It doesn't mean that nobody was there to do that, but it's just you never know, right? You never know what can happen, and you always got to be thinking defensively in these situations.
Well, we've had our situations here in Escambia County with a terrorist event. We've had a couple shootings inside, some grocery stores. We have one at the Grocery Advantage. We don't want people to just be constantly concerned and worried and hiding out. But I do think, as you mentioned, it's wise for someone to take stock in their own protection and whether they want to carry a concealed weapon, or not, at least have a plan, and talk about that plan with your family, because while we don't anticipate anything terrible happening, we understand that that is a possibility. And we also understand that things have happened. It's just an unfortunate world that we live in, and I think protection and of course, from a law enforcement perspective, the the protection of the citizens is always number one priority.
Absolutely. And look, we had a police officer responding to the scene who wound up losing his life in the process. So just because you have a gun in training, it doesn't guarantee, a right outcome. Be under no illusions. But it's just, the possibility of being better prepared for it, and a horrible day for law enforcement in Boulder. Chip Simmons, Sheriff in Escambia County. Sheriff, thank you so much for the time. Thanks, as always, to your men and women who keep us safe. We appreciate the work, sir.
You bet. Y'all take care.
7:50 here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Good morning, 7:53, News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. We've got Cooper Davis sitting in for Mark Jacobs all this week in the morning. Good to have you in the mornings with me again. It's like old times.
I know, man. Get the band back
together.
Like
the early days of the show when you were the news director and the morning news anchor, not now the afternoon anchor and the afternoon news, well, the overall news director. What's going on in the newsroom, Coop?
Be here with you, raising my coffee to you, Andrew. here we go. Young shark bite victim in Miami-Dade County. Showing signs of progress today, Minnesota 9-year-old Jay Wieskopf was bitten by a shark Sunday in Miami Beach in shallow water near 2nd Street there. He's been in the hospital ever since. His mom, though, says he could be released from the ICU today after getting over 100 stitches. Pretty serious shark bite there. And also from Florida, the numbers 3, 2, and 1 will have special meaning for one Florida family. Carter Kerr was born, get this, Sunday, March 21st, 321, at 3:21 p.m.
Nice.
At Cape Canaveral Hospital, which is in the 321 area code.
I thought we were going to have a preemie weighing in at 4 pounds, 5 ounces.
No.
Which would have been?
321 ounces?
No.
Sorry, I'm just kidding.
4 pounds, 5 ounces would have been 3 pounds, 21 ounces.
There you go. I got you.
Davis is look.
Dude, this highbrow stuff with the math, man. Can't do it.
I love you so much, Davis. But you look at me, you're like, okay, all right.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just going to keep nodding my head.
Carter, by the way, the baby weighed 8 pounds, 12 ounces.
nowhere close.
And measured 19 inches long. And the hospital says he's your mom or are in good health.
Yeah, it'd be like if you told me how many grams that would be. I don't know. 321? Right. I have no idea. All right, Coop, thanks for the update. Davis Allen, now time for a quick shot of sports.
Well, the NCAA Sweet 16 for the men's college basketball tournament, it is set. Yesterday we had round two matchups. Gonzaga, Michigan, Florida State, Oregon, UCLA, Creighton, USC, all these teams moving on. USC and Oregon winning their games in upset fashion. USC taking out Kansas while Oregon took out Iowa. Also, the NFL draft that's coming up here at the end of April when it normally would happen, and they're going to be having fans back in attendance, so that's fun. There'll be some people there to boo the commissioner, which is better than how they did it last year.
Love
virtually,
it.
So a lot better there. And Deshaun Watson, quarterback of the Houston Texans, appears to be in a whole bunch of trouble. A lot of allegations being pressed to get him, make it a baker's dozen, as 13 lawsuits have been filed against the quarterback.
Wow.
As he has had himself quite the offseason for sure. I'm Davis Allen with your quick shot of sports. Now rolling this into your traffic because we do have a couple of accidents out there I do want to mention. Starting going eastbound on I-10 as you are going across the Highway 29 overpass is where you'll notice this accident, but you're going to be met with these delays right around when you get to the 9 Mile Road exit. That's exit 5. Also southbound Pine Forest Road in between 9 Mile and I-10 delayed due to this accident. Also Highway 29 southbound going in between 9 Mile and I-10 showing delays, and also seeing Davis Highway delays going towards High 10 as well. Going along Garcon Point Bridge, though, it is slow moving southbound. You'll be met with these delays as you are going just through the toll plaza. You'll be met right as you're getting onto the bridge. Eastbound and westbound traffic of Gulf Breeze Parkway showing delays also as these backups are taking place. And also seeing delays along Blue Angel Parkway going northbound, stretching in between Highway 98 all the way up to Kearney Road and the front gate of NES Pensacola. It is proving good news there, but we are still seeing delays backed up around the intersection close to Winthrop Avenue is really where I'm seeing these delays. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
Hey, so yes, after they went by the Brownsville Community Center for the walk-up Moderna shot clinic and got my first shot in my left arm. A little sore on the arm, not a big deal. Expected, going to get another shot in 4 weeks. Easy. Plus, now I'm eligible to eat my Krispy Kreme every day. It's actually a little bit later on this month, I think, is when they start doing that. But free Krispy Kreme every single day of the year for anybody who's got at least one vaccine. You got to show your card. And I think it's like, for everybody, it's free coffee and a donut on Mondays or something like that. But anybody who gets vaccinated, you can get a free donut at Krispy Kreme. So, you know, now I can afford to put on the weight that I'm getting vaccinated, right?